This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A deadly incident during a victory parade in Liverpool, England. Fans celebrating their city's Premier League soccer championship when police say 53-year-old men plowed into the crowd. More than 45 people were injured, four seriously. ABC's Ian Pannell.
The police very clearly saying that at this point in time, they don't believe that it was terrorism. They don't believe anyone else was involved in this. I guess the key questions for them now is what led up to this in the first place? What was the trigger if indeed this wasn't a deliberate attack, as appears to be the case right now?
King Charles is in Canada to open Parliament. His visit widely viewed as a show of support in the face of continued threats by President Trump to try to make Canada the 51st state. A former police chief in a small Arkansas town on the run after escaping from prison where he was serving time for rape and murder. Three more of the 10 Louisiana escaped inmates now found. Two more still on the loose. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. George Wendt passed away earlier this week. Most people know him as Norm from Cheers, where he spent 11 seasons and was the only cast member, including Ted Danson, to appear in all 275 episodes. In addition to Cheers, his credits include Fletch, Airplane 2, Outside Providence, and of course, Bob Swirsky, one of the Chicago superfans. Here are a couple fun facts about George Wendt. He got his start in Chicago at Second City, but his first job there was sweeping floors. He's actually the uncle to Ted Lasso himself, Jason Sudeikis. Here are some fun Norm lines to remember George Wendt by.
What's shaking, Norm?
All four cheeks and a couple of chins, Coach.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Boston Red Sox in town. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, game two of the Brewers and Red Sox. The Crew winning yesterday 3-2. Trevor McGill with the save. And lefty D.L. Hall awarded the win after coming off the 60-day IL plagued with injuries. I asked Hall how it felt first game back in front of a sold-out stadium in front of over 40,000 fans.
Oh, great. I mean, I was excited, you know, just to be back out there. Executed the pitches when I need to. Other than the leadoff walk, I thought it was pretty good.
Packers quarterback Jordan Love on hand to throw out the first pitch. Spent about a half hour in the Brewers clubhouse before the game.
It was awesome. Being down in the clubhouse, talking to all the guys, you know, how they get ready for a game. It's definitely a lot different than football environment, but these guys are playing games every day. So it's definitely a whole different world coming out here and seeing the behind-the-scenes action. So I'm very grateful that they were able to welcome me in there and just talk and hang out for a little bit. They all seem like really good guys.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Matt Nair on air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Scattered showers, even a rumble of thunder or two possible today, tonight into tomorrow. Won't be a lot of rain, though. Maybe a tenth of an inch or more, a little more in a few spots. Today, mostly cloudy, 68. Tonight, we'll drop down to near 50. Tomorrow, our highs will be in the mid-60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
At it on a Tuesday morning. Welcome in, everybody. I'm the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. We'll be joined this morning by John Heinberg, Market Advisor, Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. See how the markets are reacting to the extended weekend. Also on the way, Stu Mocker, Ag Meteorologist, with your weather details. Forecast in front of me calls for maybe a little bit of a sprinkle here or there this morning. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies. Highs today around 69 with a breeze out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rain gets better tonight. Overnight, about 50% possibility. Wednesday, showers are also possible with thunderstorms in the afternoon. Daytime highs tomorrow expected to be around 64. Thursday, another chance of showers in the morning. Otherwise, a sunny day on Thursday, 72. Friday, more showers in the forecast. Daytime highs on Friday around 78. Hopefully you got that hay picked up after the first crop cutting. We'll find out what Stu has to say about the weather on the way.
Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win tickets to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
I've had a lot of opportunities to do some traveling, and I've made it to Washington, D.C. for Washington Watch. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire. I've got Sigrid Johannes. She's Senior Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. A lot of talk about screwworm in Mexico. What are some of the things that we're doing to keep it at bay and not come into our national cattle herd?
So there's three things that we really need to accomplish to hold back screwworm, Jill. Number one is getting the funding from Congress to construct our own sterile insect facility here in the United States. Currently, we depend on the factory in Pecora, Panama to produce all of those. And if it gets to our border, if it gets even a little bit closer to our border than it already is, we are going to really need that fly production to be based in the United States so we can push it out, not just from border states, but from any other areas in the southwest or southeast that it might get into. The second key piece of this is producer education. It's been several decades, in some cases one or two generations, since producers were dealing with this firsthand. The United States eradicated screwworm in 1966. We had our last outbreak. It was a very small one in the Florida Keys in 2016. So it's been a while since people have had to look for this regularly, be checking their cattle constantly, looking at those dehorning sites, those wounds, those lesions. Certainly during calving season, umbilical cords are a big concern. Getting folks up to date and vigilant again on what we're looking for, particularly in those border states that are at the highest risk. And then the third piece is to just keep doing what we're already doing. We're currently dropping about 117 million sterile insects per week over the five southern Mexican states that border Guatemala. That is our best chance at pushing this parasite back into Central America and away from our border with Mexico. But we've really got to stay on top of that and keep doing it, because that fly has made really quick progress up through Central America and through those five Mexican southern states. And it's currently reaching the second and sort of last biological barrier that we have there in the country before it's got a pretty clear path up through the central part of the country towards our border. So continuing to drop those flies, building our own fly facility, and improving producer education on this topic are the three things we're focused on.
Do you know what Mexico is doing to help you out?
Well, not enough, I would say, is the short answer. They currently are cooperating when it comes to dropping sterile insects over those five states, but we had some disruptions there. Mexico was holding up a whole bunch of permits and paperwork and red tape, essentially related to the small planes that fly and distribute those sterile insects over the southern part of the country. And there was no real good reason for this, and it was a really costly disruption. When we don't drop, again, that 117 million flies per week, every day that we miss that target, target is a day that those screwworms have an opportunity to move closer towards our border. So we were very thankful. We have been in close contact with the USDA working on this issue for months now, and we were very grateful that Secretary Rollins stepped in, had discussions with her counterpart in Mexico, had discussions with their aviation authorities, with their Department of Agriculture, and got the approvals necessary and sort of cleared up that red tape so that those planes can start flying again. That kind of leadership from USDA is essential, and we're very appreciative of it. I think it's a shame that, sometimes we don't have that same sort of level of participation or cooperation from Mexico. But I will say, Mexican producers, NCBA's counterparts on the ground at CNOG, those farmers and ranchers are doing everything they can to turn this back. They're keeping a very watchful eye on their herds. They're reporting cases when they find them. The producers are doing everything they can. I think we just need to see that full level of effort from the government there as well.
And now the brakes were pumped when it came to importing those Mexican feeder cattle. Then the border did open up again to that. What are some of the steps that happened in order to make that happen?
So APHIS pretty much revamped their entire protocol for live cattle imports from Mexico in response to the screwworm threat. In the past, that was a pretty smooth path as in terms of imports, but they added a lot of additional screening, a lot of additional treatments on the Mexican side of the border before those cattle can come in. The border was shut, as you noted, Jill, for several weeks between December and January earlier this year before it reopened. And that protocol is working. We've seen the numbers that are able to clear through the four ports of entry that are currently open steadily increase week over week. I would say they're doing a great job. APHIS is pretty pleased with the results they're getting. We're getting good rates of turnbacks of cattle that have issues that are getting detected before they cross the border on the Mexican side. And so the system is working. I think the concern is, we do have a lot of folks, particularly in Texas, in Arizona, in Colorado, in the southern Great Plains, and in the Southwest, who feed out a lot of those Mexican cattle. And so we are definitely behind the pace of where we would normally be. We normally bring in about 1 million Mexican feeders per year. We're certainly going to be well behind that this year due to screwworm. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is keeping the U.S. herd safe. And we certainly appreciate all the work APHIS has done to that effect.
Well, I appreciate hearing that some of those cattle were turned back, because we're not building our herds here in the United States. Nobody's pushing to bring something that's questionable across. Any idea on the numbers wise, how many aren't making it across?
Rejection rates are usually at about 2 or 3%, I believe. Interestingly enough, they haven't gone significantly up or down pre and post screwworm. There are a lot of different reasons why cattle might be sort of caught and held back at the Mexican side of the border. It's not just screwworm. Certainly there are other health concerns as well that could qualify them for that rejection. But I think the encouraging news there is that we're seeing the system sort of hold the line in the face of screwworm. We're not seeing a huge number going up, which we wouldn't expect necessarily, because screwworm hasn't made it to a lot of those border states with our border in Mexico yet, places like Sonora and Chihuahua and Tamaulipas. But at the same time, if screwworm makes it to the northern part of Mexico, we would expect to see those rates go up. But for now, they're holding in this sort of single-digit percents that we would expect, and we're glad to see that, because that means that we're not giving up any ground, but we're also not in a full-blown emergency yet there at those four ports of entry.
And is there any push to get more of those cattle across, more checkpoints, build on our herd and fill those feedlots?
So we would certainly like to see one of those fifth ports of entry open. I think there's a lot of demand for that on the Mexican side, frankly. There's a lot of folks there, exporters, who want to see another port of entry opened to bring in cattle into the United States. I think the bottom line is this is a time where APHIS is very strapped for personnel. That's no secret. There's been a lot of departures from USDA. About 15% of all USDA employees have left the department over the last couple of weeks due to the deferred resignations and buyouts that DOGE has offered and that the Trump administration has offered. So they are currently short-staffed. I think they are doing yeoman's work and really working as fast as they can to move cattle through those four ports of entry safely and effectively. I think our concern is, even though there's a lot of demand from exporters in Mexico, again, our number one priority is what is safest for the U.S. cattle herd. And I think it would be pretty tough with the staffing that they have right now to open a fifth port safely, but we'll stay in touch with APHIS and we'll see how it goes. Maybe they'll be able to put something together, but we don't want them to rush that process and cut any corners here.
And you did bring up that staffing with the retirements and with a lot of people leaving that industry. We looking to maybe build back up again, if at all possible?
We'll see. We haven't seen a whole lot of signals yet or cues that the herd is rebuilding. I tend to defer to the good gentleman at Cattle Facts for that information. information because they usually give a pretty good forecast every year. But, you know, as recently as February when we were in San Antonio for the annual cattle convention, nobody ever misses that cattle fact session. It's always one of the best ones. And we got the same message that we've gotten for a couple years now in a row, which is we don't really see any cues yet that that herd is rebuilding. So I think you're still going to see herd numbers pretty tight for another year. Cattle numbers are historically low. I'm sure everyone has noticed that because we've got really good prices right now, and that's partly as a result of those low numbers. But, you know, that also has an impact on beef prices. I think my big interest over the course of this year is going to be to see and make sure that that demand for beef and that consumer appetite for a product remains strong, even as we see these prices remain relatively high.
And as a beef producer myself, wondering if the demand was going to stay put. What are you seeing when it comes from your point of view?
I think it's holding very steady. I think there's a couple things we have to basically keep doing right to make sure that that remains the case. There's a couple things we can do to keep the demand strong as well on the consumer side of the equation. One of those is preventing unnecessary or sort of unforced errors in the animal disease space. I think it's been really interesting to see the impact that HIPAA has had on the poultry sector. Certainly our friends in chicken and turkey have been suffering from that for several years. ASF in the swine space. There's all kinds of animal diseases that once they get circulating, not only do they have a major impact on inventory, on the, you know, supply of animals and the supply of that protein, it also reaches into the consumer side. I think you've seen a huge uptick in news coverage, particularly of HIPAA over the last couple months, and that colors people's perceptions of the product. It colors people's ideas about how those animals are raised and how safe the product is. So making sure that we continue sharing the message about, like, look, here's how we raise cattle in this country. Here's what we do to keep them healthy and safe. Here's what we do on food safety in terms of the inspection and plants and things like that. And here's what we do to deliver a safe, high-quality, nutritious product. As long as we keep sharing the facts out there, I think we've got a really good chance of keeping beef demand strong there. The checkoff does a lot of work across the country to keep beef demand strong.
That was Sigrid Johannes, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And I'm Joe Welke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Barrio.
Senator Tammy Baldwin presses EPA head Lee Zeldin on Great Lakes funding at a hearing on Capitol Hill. The exchange came just 1 week after Clean Wisconsin, the Healing Our Waters Coalition, and Alliance for the Great Lakes met with Baldwin to stress the importance of fully funding the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Zeldin ended up going on record saying the protections would be funded. Wisconsin's muskie season is here. Northern muskie season opens May 24th and runs through the end of the year. This is the 70th anniversary of the muskellunge being proclaimed our official state fish back in 1955. The biggest muskie ever caught was in 1949 near Hayward, weighing in at more than 69 pounds. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Joining us, how was the Memorial Weekend for all your folks?
Well, pretty good. They started cutting hay in my neighborhood, but what day is it now? Tuesday? Mm-hmm. I think they started cutting hay on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So getting busy.
Yeah, for sure. I saw a lot of hay down. Looked good from the road, anyhow. Hoping it's not too tough or anything like that, because now we've got that hit-and-miss shower all of a sudden back in the forecast. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's the one that's going to become a little troublesome for your hay plans and things like that. We've watched the soil dry out, the corn coming up now. Things are looking a little better out across the fields, but then we have to talk about precipitation, a little more of an unsettled week coming in as well. And a quick check of radar this morning indicates west of Madison, a little area of some sprinkles or very light rain. There's more of that activity in Iowa, far southern and western parts of Minnesota. There's rain out there. It's out to our west, not an imminent threat. We're not going to get a flood or anything like that, because high pressure is still just off to our northeast, trying to keep things high and dry. But there is an upper level system trying to build northeast out of the southern part of the U.S., tapping into some moisture out of the Gulf. And that's all going to work together, that there may be some sprinkles here or there, that chance in south central Wisconsin this morning. The rest of us in western Wisconsin could see that chance a bit later this afternoon. And then later tonight into Wednesday, almost all of us a chance of rain. Not a big deal, a couple of tenths of an inch, a quarter inch. There could be a thunderstorm tomorrow that would lead to a little heavier localized rain, a half inch or so, but that's all we really expect. Not going to be a flood out, but that rain chance around, especially through midweek, may linger into Wednesday night. A small chance in the south later Thursday or later Friday again. You know, every now and again, there could be a little rain, and then the next minute, the sun's going to be back. That's how this one works out, especially by later in the week. One of the bigger factors I like, it does get and stay warmer, and daytime highs ought to be back into the 70s, almost statewide, as we make our way toward Wednesday, or certainly by Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Very warm air, more like what we expect to see at the end of May, and that's definitely going to help crop growth, that warm up. And, of course, getting that soil warmer, getting things going. It's getting to be a good growing season as it gets underway. I'll have forecast details right after
with
this.
With Clarifly Larvicide, you get more than just a fly control product. You get more support, more expertise, and more control to prevent the emergence of nuisance flies from the manure of treated cattle by as much as 96%. It is perfectly blended in your mineral supplement to become a part of what you are already doing, feeding your cattle. Get control of flies with a comprehensive program built around Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. To learn more about Clarifly Larvicide, contact your local feed dealer or visit centralflycontrol.com.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
All right, thanks, Max. Go ahead, Stu. Let's have that forecast.
All right, let's talk about that little sprinkle chance in the south this morning. And for the rest of us, call it mostly cloudy, even partly sunny. That sun will win out and brighten it up now and again. Doesn't sound like a horrible day, and we'll be in the upper 60s. There may be a 70 here or there in the west, and winds out of the east about 5 to 10. Overnight, mostly cloudy skies, and that chance of sprinkles or a few scattered showers almost statewide. I'd expect nighttime lows in the upper 40s and low 50s. A little cool yet. The northeast winds only 5 to 10. Mostly cloudy Wednesday. Showers could be an afternoon thunderstorm. There's where rain adds up. Quarter inch or so, about the most we'd expect. We ought to hold in the lower and mid 60s with northeast breezes. And Pam, by Thursday, mostly sunny. We start warming it up. A slight rain chance in the south Thursday afternoon, but everybody starts pushing into the low 70s. There could be a little rain chance in the south later Friday, but mid and upper 70s for daytime highs. There may be 80s around here by early next week.
Well, and I know when you say just a little, I think there's people out there saying, wait a minute, Stu, how much is just a little? I mean, that's what the rainfall reporters...
Couple hundredths of an inch, maybe a tenth of an inch.
Okay, all right.
Well, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, there it was. It was rain.
Okay. That we can handle. All right, buddy. Well, we'll catch up with you tomorrow and see where we stand. Thanks.
Sounds good. See ya.
Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, with the weather details that you're looking for on a Tuesday morning with a lot of hay that's been cut already around the state. We'll find out what the markets say about not only the weather, but the international conditions as well. John Heinberg, market advisor, on the way on a Tuesday.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Today we're looking at a principle called the Gingles test that federal courts use when determining whether a gerrymandered redistricting map is a violation of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. How that test is interpreted can determine whether minority voters can elect the candidate of their choice or their vote is diluted by an anti-voter state legislature. A group of black voters sued the North Carolina legislature in 1982, arguing their voting districts violated the Voting Rights Act by diluting their vote and keeping black North Carolinians from electing the candidate of their choice. Before it came to trial, Congress clarified the VRA to say intentional discrimination didn't need to be proved, just the effect of discrimination was enough to be a violation of Section 2. Thornburg versus Gingles created a three-part test for federal courts to use when considering whether a VRA violation had occurred. It stipulates the minority group is sufficiently large and geographically compact to constitute a majority in a single-member district. The minority group is politically cohesive, usually voting the same way, and the white majority votes sufficiently as a block, usually defeating the minority's preferred candidate. As shown in the recent overturning of Louisiana's new congressional map, the interpretation of geographically compact and politically cohesive still leaves wiggle room for discrimination. We have more on Gingles and the VRA at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser, we have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A deadly incident during a victory parade in Liverpool, England. Fans celebrating their city's Premier League soccer championship when police say 53-year-old men plowed into the crowd. More than 45 people were injured, 4 seriously. ABC's Ian Pannell.
The police very clearly saying that at this point in time, they don't believe that it was terrorism. They don't believe anyone else was involved in this. I guess the key questions for them now is what led up to this in the first place? What was the trigger if indeed this wasn't a deliberate attack, as appears to be the case right now?
King Charles is in Canada to open Parliament. His visit widely viewed as a show of support in the face of continued threats by President Trump to try to make Canada the 51st state. A former police chief in a small Arkansas town on the run after escaping from prison where he was serving time for rape and murder. 3 more of the 10 Louisiana escaped inmates now found. 2 more still on the loose. This is ABC News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. George Wendt passed away earlier this week. Most people know him as Norm from Cheers, where he spent 11 seasons and was the only cast member, including Ted Danson, to appear in all 275 episodes. In addition to Cheers, his credits include Fletch, Airplane 2, Outside Providence, and of course, Bob Swirsky, one of the Chicago superfans. Here are a couple fun facts about George Wendt. He got his start in Chicago at Second City, but his first job there was sweeping floors. He's actually the uncle to Ted Lasso himself, Jason Sudeikis. Here are some fun Norm lines to remember George Wendt by.
What's shaking, Norm?
All 4 cheeks and a couple of chins, Coach.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabo, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Boston Red Sox in town. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, game two of the Brewers and Red Sox. The Crew winning yesterday 3-2. Trevor McGill with the save. And lefty D.L. Hall awarded the win after coming off the 60-day IL plagued with injuries. I asked Hall how it felt first game back in front of a sold-out stadium in front of over 40,000 fans.
Oh, great. I mean, I was excited, you know, just to be back out there. Executed the pitches when I need to. Other than the leadoff walk, I thought it was pretty good.
Packers quarterback Jordan Love on hand to throw out the first pitch. Spent about a half hour in the Brewers clubhouse before the game.
It was awesome. Being down in the clubhouse, talking to all the guys, you know, how they get ready for a game. It's definitely a lot different than football environment, but these guys are playing games every day. So it's definitely a whole different world coming out here and seeing the behind-the-scenes action. So I'm very grateful that they were able to welcome me in there and just talk and hang out for a little bit. They all seem like really good guys.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Scattered showers, even a rumble of thunder or two possible today, tonight into tomorrow. Won't be a lot of rain, though. Maybe a tenth of an inch or more, a little more in a few spots. Today, mostly cloudy, 68. Tonight, we'll drop down to near 50. Tomorrow, our highs will be in the mid-60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Attention Badger fans, memories are made at Camp Randall, so bring your group and be part of the action this fall. Whether you're planning your team outing or just looking to get together with your crew, Badger football group experiences are your ticket to unforgettable moments and new traditions. Take advantage of discounts and exclusive game day experiences when you lock in your group tickets today. Visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Usinger's has been making America's finest sausage for over 140 years. Now Usinger's fresh brats are flash frozen and vacuum packed so they stay butcher shop fresh for 6 months in your freezer. And because there's no air in the package, there's no need for chemical preservatives. Usinger's fresh brats are the freshest, most additive free you will find. Enjoy some this summer with our other Great Link products. Our backpack sausage seals in flavor and leaves out chemicals. Remember, if it's got the elf on the label, you've got quality on your table.
Elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill, complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
Matt and Air on Air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Eber's budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though. Because
probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong. They tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
150-pound nose tackles.
I've been glancing at my screens all morning long to see how the markets are reacting in overnight electronic trade. Looks like the Dow Jones Industrial Average still struggling. Commodities a little bit mixed. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us live on a Tuesday morning. Make sure you know what kind of information they are filtering through as they start after the Memorial weekend. Welcome back. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 27th day of May. Let's see, on this day, back in 1851, the world's first chess tournament is held in London. A math teacher from one area of the city won the tournament, which was held parallel to the 1851 Great Exhibition. That started on this day back in 1851. Walt Disney's cartoon, The Three Little Pigs, was released on this day, 1933. This day, 1937, the Golden Gate Bridge is open, connecting San Francisco's peninsula with Marin County, one of the most recognized works of United States architecture globally. Happened on this day, 1937. And let's see, happy anniversary today to Lisa Kudrow, Phoebe. She and her husband, Michael Stern, married on this day back in 1995 and still together. Congratulations. Well, as we get rolling on a Tuesday, maybe you got a chance to get into the great outdoors over the weekend. And one item that might have drawn your attention, asparagus. It's that time of the year. Fresh Wisconsin asparagus available in places like ditches, but also available at farm stands all across the state. Charity Seebecker finds out how the crop's looking.
Green Barn Farm Market is enjoying an exceptional asparagus season, boosted by some ideal growing conditions and high customer demand. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Heather Brandt, owner of this farm in Ripon, says this year's crop is shaping up to be one of their best in years.
We were established in 1992. We bought a farm 6 months before we were married, and I grabbed 10 acres and started the produce, and now we're up over 100. So, but that was 34 years ago, and now we do retail and wholesale.
So then what specific varieties of asparagus do you grow?
So we have two beds that we planted at different times. We pick over a total of 10 acres, but the first was 7 acres, and it was a Jersey Knight and Jersey Giant variety. And the most recent one we planted probably 6 years ago, and that was a new variety called Mary Washington. And it's a smaller size, but more prolific. And it is really coming in this year.
How is the asparagus crop looking so far this season then?
So far this season, it's looking really fantastic. Nice big spears coming in. It's growing really fast right now, really rapidly. We have large quantities and really high quality. Nice. Everybody wants the smaller, you know, skinnier spears because they think it's more tender. That's not true. We have nice fat spears, and, you know, the heads on the top are real tight, not seeded out. So the quality is looking really great this year.
How does that compare to last year, even just past years in general, in terms of that quality and the quantity even that you're getting?
I have to say this is probably going to turn out to be one of our better years. I'm going to be completely honest, not quite understanding how that's happening, because some of my perennials didn't do very well over the winter because we didn't have a lot of snow cover. But the asparagus is just as happy as can be. I wish I could figure out nature sometimes, but you just can't. So we pick every day. When it's warm like this, you have to pick every 24 hours at a minimum. And I believe they're picking just about 1,000 pounds every day.
So then with the reports of soil moisture levels fluctuating across Wisconsin, how are your soil conditions holding up for this year? Like you mentioned over the winter, that kind of changed some things. So I know you mentioned you're a little surprised at how things are going.
Our soil moisture has been perfect so far. And the growing point of the asparagus is quite a bit below the soil level. So it's down there where the moisture is. I mean, we do still need regular rains, but it's not as susceptible as, say, a broccoli plant that is, you know, just within the first couple inches of the soil, right? The growing point of the asparagus is at least 8 inches below.
As it gets nicer now, we start to hear more about the pests and disease pressures across Wisconsin. Are you facing any specific challenges in terms of that or pest control or anything like that?
That's one of the most beautiful things about asparagus. Hardly any pests eat it. We rarely, if ever, I think I can remember one time we've been selling asparagus for 25 years, one time that we've had a spray for the Japanese beetle, and that is it. Like nothing, I mean, a knock on wood, nothing has bothered us. Now, we do fertilize it, we feed it, you know, just nitrogen each year, and that's about it. And then maybe a light herbicide application mid-season, just so, you know, because obviously the grass comes along with it and the perennial weeds want to come along. Well, even the annual weeds want to come up with it, but just a quick application of an herbicide and you're good to go.
Once again, that's Heather Brandt of Green Barn Farm Market in Ripon along with us. Whether you visit their farm store, a local market, or a favorite restaurant of yours, you're sure to enjoy some of Wisconsin's best asparagus this season. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Here at the Midwest Farm Report, we're always keeping an eye on what's catching your attention. And if you missed anything, don't worry, we've got you covered. Here are the top five stories that you listened to this week.
Coming in at number five, still waiting for WOTUS improvements.
Number four, the nose that knows inside the Beagle Brigade.
At number three, pet food and livestock feed are opportunities to upcycle.
Number two, Secretary Rollins comments on trade wars and brain drain.
And your number one most listened to story from last week, Wisconsin begins monthly milk sampling.
Stay tuned for more of the stories that matter to you right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
Don't forget John Heinberg, our market advisor, along with us in just a few minutes on a Tuesday morning. Well, last week we got more details from the Make America Healthy Again Commission when they released their report on Thursday. Guidelines that have a lot of production agriculture quite concerned. The commission very critical of farm chemical use. They say it's not going to cost one farm its livelihood. Last week during a Senate committee hearing, Robert Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and really the drive behind the Make America Healthy Again Commission, testified that any misinformation you're hearing about their commission report costing farms their livelihood is absolutely inaccurate. Listen to this exchange with a senator from Mississippi.
Your information about the report is just simply wrong. The drafts that I've seen, there is not a single word in them that should worry the American farmer.
And you can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. That
well, you'll see the report. It's going to be released on Thursday. Everybody will see the report. And, you know, there's nobody that has a greater commitment to the American farmer than we do. The MAHA movement collapses if we can't partner with the American farmer and producing a safe, robust, and abundant food supply. And we understand that. I said during my campaign when I was running for president, and I have said repeatedly throughout this process, we cannot take any step that will put a single farmer in this country out of business.
Okay,
there's a million farmers who rely on glyphosate. There's a million farmers who rely on glyphosate. 100% of corn in this country relies on glyphosate. And we are not going to do anything to jeopardize that business model. We are.
But you're saying my comments are totally inaccurate.
Totally inaccurate.
Completely inaccurate. Well, we'll wait and see on that one. Robert Kennedy Jr., Secretary of Health and Human Services, and one of the major drivers behind the Make America Healthy Again Commission report. Markets in overnight electronic trade this morning. Dow Jones Industrial Average shaking off the Memorial weekend, up more than 500 points right now. Commodities not doing that well. July corn down a penny. December new crop down 2.5 right now at 448. July soybeans are up 4. November new crop up 3.5 at 1054. July wheat's currently 6.5 lower at 536 a bushel. On Friday, barrel cheese dropped a penny and 3/4 to 185 and a quarter. 40-pound block cheese was down 7¾ cents to 187, but AA butter gained 5¾ cents, 242 a pound. Currently, the June class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 6 at 1940. July up 18 at 1983 100 weight. John Heinberg is next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Attention Badger fans, memories are made at Camp Randall, so bring your group and be part of the action this fall. Whether you're planning your team outing or just looking to get together with your crew, Badger football group experiences are your ticket to unforgettable moments and new traditions. Take advantage of discounts and exclusive game day experiences when you lock in your group tickets today. Visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Carmelo Anthony for the Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser, we have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
So let's jump right in, John, because the markets don't wait. Tariffs back making headlines and making movement in the marketplace. Dow Jones in particular, robust this morning.
Yeah, we're seeing a good move in the equity markets. We did have equity futures trading yesterday with the Memorial Day holiday, and we saw some pretty good response. Obviously, the headline news that came out, President Trump at the end of last week was going to have 50% tariffs on all goods going into the or coming from the EU or the European Union on July 1st. And then over the weekend, he gave an extension to July 9th. That got the stock market to snap right back from those losses at the end of the week there, at least the majority of them so far here to start the trading week. So again, another one of those situations, tariff on, tariff off. We'll have to kind of figure out how that plays out as we go forward, but it just continues to keep that volatility in the marketplace. You know, that one's probably going to be a little bit more industry and equity market driven versus the ag markets. I mean, the European Union obviously does buy some commodities from us, but not at the level that some of those other major purchasers are. So that's why we're not seeing maybe such a reaction in the grains markets regarding that tariff news. So we'll kind of, again, have to see how the headlines kind of keep playing out as now we get closer to the next deadline again on July 9th.
John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend here on the Midwest Farm Report. Again, totalfarmmarketing.com, 800-334-9779. Let's talk weather then, John, because that is something commodities respond to. Some severe storms that kind of slowed Memorial Weekend travel in the south, but what are you seeing weather-wise? Anything that's going to get us a jump on corn, beans? I see wheat's down quite a bit today.
Yeah, we got some pretty good weakness in the cereal grains. That'd be the corn and the wheat markets, at least to start the overnight session last night. And thinly traded with the holidays, so we'll see how the day kind of shakes out today. But you start looking at the forecast this time of year, and what do we got? More about those 8 to 14-day type models and looking at those longer-range models. And you're looking at a fairly good forecast for crop development here this spring so far. You know, next couple of weeks, we're looking at temperatures staying on the warm side, but no major deficiencies. At least of rainfall according to those longer range models. Western Corn Belt is going to stay slightly above average in rainfall. Most of the Corn Belt is going to be average. So when you start staying warm and you get a little bit of wetness to it, that's pretty good weather for crops to grow. I think that's some of the factors we're seeing at least on the corn market this morning. And then over the weekend too, we had some really good rains in some of those parts of the KC wheat belt. We're hearing some pretty good crop sizes coming out of the spring wheat area, which is like the Illinois area. In that region. So that's just putting some pressure on the wheat market this morning. So those two kind of work together, corn and wheat, with wheat being a downside leader so far here this morning.
Right, right. Friday also brought us cattle on feed reports. As if people weren't already aware of it, John, our cattle herd numbers just continue to not grow, right?
Yes, that is correct. And, you know, we saw this latest cattle on feed numbers come out. And again, we're talking cattle numbers 98% of last year's total. This is total cattle on feed and feedlots. And last year's total was a deflated number compared to the previous year. So we're just continuing to see tight supplies. I think the biggest thing maybe the longer term industry is worried about is feeder cattle placements. In other words, cattle that are coming in, getting put in those feedlots, and that's going to be the available beef for us for the back half of the year, given the time it takes to raise a calf out to and up to slaughter weights. And we continue to see placements also be very weak. A lot of that's tied to that Mexican screwworm ban that we have on Mexican feeder cattle coming into the United States. And that's going to be a headline we got to continue to watch. If we can continue to hold that ban, which could be very difficult to break here over the summer months as populations of this fly that causes this worm continue to grow, you know, we're going to continue to see depleted cattle numbers, and that's just going to keep those beef prices high as we move well back into 2025 and probably even in the first part of 2026.
Have we heard anything, John, on Mexico's goal of eradicating screwworm in their cattle? I mean, the news we're hearing is there's only one place in the world where the fly that kills or renders that pest unable to reproduce is out of Panama. Is Mexico get aggressive enough for our U.S. market's mind frame on trying to get rid of this thing?
That's going to be the interesting part of this. And obviously, the USDA and, you know, we're putting up a wall at Texas in terms of some of the programs in Texas trying to keep this fly from migrating into the United States in the first place. So there's going to be some backing behind the United States to help with this problem because, obviously, you know, we need those cattle up here in order to provide the meat sources for the United States consumer. So it's going to be interesting to watch how that continues to develop. Again, they're using those biological controls, which are natural predators, as well as sterilization on some of the male flies and releasing those flies into the population. So it's a unique factor of turning how to control an insect. And that's going to be something that's going to take some time and it's going to take a lot of dollars in terms of trying to fight this battle. But again, we need those Mexican cattle. Our cattle numbers just aren't here. And we need those cattle to come across that border, get into our feedlots so we can keep that beef supply at least a readily available pace.
What about to the north? Anything coming from Canada to try to help us keep some sustainability going as far as beef?
You know, we do bring some cattle in from the northern tier in terms of feeder cattle imports. It's nowhere near the level that we bring in from Mexico. I think some of that's just the climate and environment up in that region in terms of bringing those cattle down. You know, we watch those Canadian numbers. They haven't exploded. Again, I think they're dealing with some of the same issues that we're dealing with here, at least in terms of consumers and production, or excuse me, producers and production, in terms of number of cattle that they offer that are available. Those Mexican cattle still seem, in terms of the southern states, to be the main import level. And again, that's going to still be, like I said, a very big factor going over the next handful of months.
Yeah, and like we said, just in case consumers are catching up with us, no Mexican cattle coming in because we fear the new world screw worm, they call it. So, all right, John, very good, my friend. Thanks a bunch for making some time for us on a Tuesday morning. We'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds good. Have a great week.
John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report. TotalFarmMarketing.com, 800-334-9779. See you tomorrow.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Child abuse is not a bad parent problem.
And the causes may be different than you think.
You see, paid family leave,
that prevents child abuse.
And high quality, affordable child care
prevents child abuse too.
Prevent Child Abuse America promotes programs and resources informed by science that help communities, parents, and kids thrive.
Because when we keep families out of crisis,
we prevent child abuse
from ever happening.
Go to preventchildabuse.org to learn more.
Let's solve child abuse before it ever happens.
Eating your way to better health today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Dr. David Katz heads the Prevention Research Center at Yale University. And as he began his medical career in 1993, the American Medical Association released a report listing the 10 top causes of death in the U.S.
What captured my imagination is that the first three entries on the list of 10, tobacco, poor diet, and lack of physical activity, accounted for 80% of premature death and chronic disease.
Fast forward to today, says Katz.
Partly because we're smoking less, that's a good thing, but also partly because there's so much junk where food ought to be. Diet quality measured objectively is the single leading predictor variable for premature death from all causes in the United States today, full stop.
Katz says a 2023 study taken in Potsdam, Germany, compared the effects of smoking, eating, and physical activity. Those who were doing the right thing in all three categories, he says, were substantially healthier.
Over a multi-year span, these people had an 80% lesser incidence of all major chronic disease. And now imagine a world where 80% of that is gone from the world around us. That's what food as medicine can help achieve.
More tomorrow. You can also learn more on the show info page at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though.
Probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong, they tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt and Air on Air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. There's been an explosion at a chemical plant in eastern China so powerful it knocked out windows at a storage warehouse more than 2 miles away. Thick plumes of black smoke can be seen rising from the plant that manufactures pesticides and chemicals for medical use. More than 500 employees work there. President Trump now threatening to pull billions in federal funding to Harvard so it can be used instead to build more trade schools and skilled labor, he says. That following the president's demand that Harvard turn over lists of foreign students enrolled at the university.
A judge has temporarily blocked the administration's ban on international students at Harvard. A hearing on the matter is set for Thursday. The fate of nearly 7,000 international students hanging in the balance.
ABC's Nicole D'Antonio. A man in his 50s driving a vehicle into a crowded street in Liverpool, England. People have been celebrating Liverpool's win in the Premier League Soccer Championship. They don't think it was an act of terrorism. This is ABC News.